Welcome to another episode of the Nui Tech People podcast. On today's episode, we have Adam Ingalls, who's a fractional CFO, director of Quick Ratio. Welcome, Adam.
Hey, James. Thanks for having me.
Obviously, this is traditionally quite a technology-focused podcast. You are a fractional CFO, not a CTO, not a CIO, but you do a lot of work working with technology startups. I thought it'd be quite interesting bringing you on to share your experience, especially working with tech startups or growing tech companies. So, mate, just for a bit of a background, give us a bit of an overview of who Adam is for those of our audience that don't know who you are.
So I've been working with tech companies since 2013. So I got my first job. I was an accountant at a startup back in Sydney called Stackler. And they were kind of put together by Damien and Pete. So Damien actually came out of Newcastle. And so ever since then, I've just kind of followed that tech path and did some work with Hipages. And then Quilla, Coassemble, another Newcastle company. So moved back to Newcastle. And then most recently just finished up at BuildKite.
Yeah, right.
Another big tech company.
Yeah, BuildKite's had some success, haven't they?
Yeah, they've got a really, really good product. So some of the world's biggest engineering companies use BuildKite to build out their team and whatnot.
Yeah, nice. You obviously went through a finance background before moving to tech. Why technology companies?
Yeah, I had a few jobs that were working in finance for non-tech companies, and they just weren't that exciting. They weren't interesting. You would work on reports and do things, and you'd start to think like, is anybody actually going to use this? And so you'd basically come home and be like, what was the point of work today? You ticked a few boxes. But then once I started working in those early technology companies, you were able to see that the work you were doing was being used by founders in their decision making. So you'd sit beside them. So I remember in my early days at Stackler, I would sit right beside Damien, and so we would work closer together almost every hour of every day. And I was like, oh, this is cool. He's starting to actually use some of the work that I'm doing. And that bit was the bit that thought, all right, if I'm going to continue working in finance, then if I can keep it in tech, then it's going to make it more exciting and interesting and progressive.
Now, you mentioned early stage technology companies, a lot of them I've worked with, finance doesn't tend to be a permanent hire early days. Is that why you've gone down that fractional route?
Yeah, that's it. So what I found is that people often leave it a little bit too late to bring in their first finance hire. And so sometimes founders can make a couple of errors early on that can really have some big impacts. So it might be like not setting up the right ESOP plan or not having the financial model in place before they go out to raise money. And so being able to work with early stage companies, but hopefully work with a few different ones to keep it varied, is basically why I've gotten into this fractional work.
Yeah, nice. Well, I'll get your advice around that fractional piece in a second. But when we go back to the technology side of things, how early is too early to bring on a finance person, or how late's too late? And do you have some advice around the companies that you've worked for on when is the best timing to bring in somebody from a finance perspective?
Yeah, I think as soon as you are starting to think about either fundraising, then you should have somebody on board in some kind of fractional or advisory capacity. So that way that you can start to bounce ideas off in terms of what you want to go out to the market with, in terms of what type of investment you're looking for, who you want to work with, how much of the company do you want to give away, what valuation. And so having somebody in on that early capacity on a limited number of hours a week can really make a big difference between a good deal and a bad deal.
Nice, mate. And you mentioned a couple hours a week. Let's sort of break this fractional thing down for people that don't know. Yeah. I think fractional CFOs, fractional CTOs, fractional work in particular, has grown quite a bit in the last half decade. Before that, I think it was a little bit, you know, maybe you'd bring in a consultancy firm or something like that. But mate, what does a fractional role mean? Like, is it somebody has to hire you for 2 days a week, 3 days a week? How do you operate in that model?
Yeah, so I cover all of them. So you can really go down to say like, what's an hourly rate?
Yeah.
And you can have somebody that might want to just use you for ad hoc number of hours, which is good for the client because they generally figure out early on, like, what are a couple of things we want to go over? And they can kind of get that down to like maybe 2 or 3 hours. And yep. The beauty of that is that in the pre-seed stages where companies don't necessarily have big fundraising, they don't have the budget to kind of go out there and do that. I work with one company who we do half a day a week. And there's another one that we do 1 day a week. So it's really spread out over, yeah, hourly basis or certain number of hours a week.
Yeah, cool. Mate, for other people that are considering fractional work, do you have any advice for them on either A, how to get into it? And let's start with how to get into it, and then we're going to try and tackle the pitfalls.
Yeah, I would say my two bits of advice are make sure that you've got enough experience under your belt so that when you start talking to prospective people, they can kind of look at your background and get comfort that you've done what they need. And I think the other one is when you've got a big enough network of people that you can kind of tap into early on, because the biggest challenge at the start is basically winning work.
Yeah.
And the more that you can leverage your word of mouth through your network, the easier it is to kind of find those people.
Yeah, nice. And mate, I guess early days, as you said, winning work is the same as any small business. How do you position yourself as opposed to a consultancy? Like, what's the, if I'm an early stage startup, why do I go for a fractional CTO as opposed to buying some consultancy from my accountant or a big firm that, you know?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think both of those options there present two different challenges. So I've been employed by startups when we've worked with big four engagements, and they basically give you the priority in terms of where you are in how much you pay them. And so you won't get the same level of attention that if you work with, say, somebody who's smaller, who can be closer to the business, who can have that one-on-one relationship with the founder, where you might talk to them on a daily basis. And on the flip side, if you might use an accountant, say you started up a company and you're using an accountant, and that accountant came recommended to you from your parents because they're the person that's done their tax for 30 years, then at the start, when it's just all bookkeeping, they might be fine. But as soon as you start to go through some kind of fundraising process and you want to start sharing some relevant metrics, the accountant might look at you and be like, what the hell's net dollar retention? We don't do that.
Yeah.
And that's usually when the benefit of a fractional CFO can start to outweigh that.
Yeah, nice. Now, you're obviously working with multiple different companies at the moment.
Yep.
Do you ever see a day where, hey, you start with a company one day a week and they're continuing to grow and grow, and then you take more of a, I guess, a permanent role with them? Do you think something like that could be, you know, in your future?
I definitely think so. And it's kind of the beauty of the fractional world, is where you almost get like a bit of a chance to see how you go working with all these founders, see what the product's like. And then when you find the company that everything just fits, then it could absolutely open up the option for like either working in there full time or even expanding their scope to include more days.
Audience predominantly technology professionals are going to talk to potentially like startup founders, people considering starting their own company or on that path. My biggest challenge for early stage technology companies, is there a challenge in particular that people should be looking out for?
I think the biggest challenge at the moment is just the economy at the moment, in terms of what that impact that's having in fundraising. So 2024, we're seeing like less fundraising happening this year. It's harder to get these early stage rounds. And so what that's doing is it's forcing companies to kind of be more conscious about how they're building out like their financial models, trying to bootstrap themselves, trying to get to break even more than before.
Yeah, cool. Any advice for companies who are considering a round or considering a raise at the moment? Obviously, a very challenging market now compared to 2 years ago. Biggest advice of companies currently sitting there considering taking on money?
Yeah, I think the biggest advice would just make sure that you've got an idea of how much money that you want. Don't take more than what you need, and make sure that you've got the financial model that kind of supports what you're going to use those funds for, so that when you do get that fundraising, you've got the blueprint of where you're going to get to.
Okay. And if I'm looking at that, am I looking to cover costs for build 2 years worth of runway? Am I looking for 6 months, 12 months, or is that a dependent on what's my revenue forecast?
It's a tricky one. A few years ago, there was always this idea of like just having enough funding to at least get to the next 18 to 24 months. But now, with the more emphasis on profitability, founders should really be looking at, can they use this funding round to get to some level of profitability? There won't be some companies where that's appropriate. For like companies that are building a massive product in deep tech or something like that, it won't be appropriate. But for everyday software companies, the goal should be trying to get to profitability.
Yeah, which wasn't the case of a couple of years ago, right? A couple of years ago, it was user acquisition and growth, user acquisition and growth, as you know, high priorities. And if you're doing that, you don't even have to be anywhere near profitable. And sometimes not even generating any revenue, is just user acquisition, right? And we'll worry about the monetization down the track. But I feel like that's changed pretty significantly the last couple of years, yeah?
Yeah, definitely. So it's been a huge shift. So now we're starting to see valuations that are probably more realistic for what the actual companies are doing, and then less funding. So companies can no longer just put together a pitch deck and go out and raise a 5 mil seed round.
All right, mate. If I'm a technology company, 6 months in the future, I'm looking to raise some money, putting together my pitch deck at the moment. Mate, what's top three things I should be highlighting?
Yeah, I think in the pitch deck, it's a really good chance to put any traction that you've got. So if you have been able to get some, get any customers, or if you've got signups, people ready to buy as soon as the product's out there, any evidence that you can show that you've got traction will go a long way. The other thing is that, what is the funds going to be spent on? So if it's putting it to go to market, then what's the go to market strategy? If it's putting on more engineers, then what's the features that they're going to build that are going to turn that traction into tangible outcomes? And then the third one is also, who's the team? In early stage investing, the product goes through that many evolutions that really they're kind of backing, like, what are the team going to do? And so if you've got a solid team there and you've all got good backgrounds, then go a huge way in a pitch deck.
Yeah, nice. Talking about funding, let's stay on this topic for a little bit. There's multiple ways to try and raise money. On the board of Hunter Angels, obviously angel investment, there's private equity. There's a lot of the accelerator programs that give some money up front, but then there's the follow-ons for that as well. Mate, do you have you seen any easy ways of going about it, or is there horses for courses? Is there an avenue that you highly recommend for the companies you work with?
Yeah, I think it depends on what stage of revenue they're at. So any of the companies that are pre-revenue, what I've found is that safe notes are really an easy way just to kind of get money without spending weeks going back and forth between investors and founders on valuations. And then once they hit some kind of revenue milestones, then it's usually easier to build in a price round in terms of a straight up equity.
Yep. Mate, for those of our audience who don't know what a safe note is, you want to give a quick explanation?
Yeah, it's a way that companies can just kind of put cash in, and then you agree on a couple of simple terms, such as you might have a valuation cap or a discount rate, but essentially when there is a price round down the track, so if the company reaches a Series A or a seed round, then the dollar value of that amount just turns into equity based on the valuation agreed in the safe.
So it's an easier way to get that money in quicker, worrying about the valuations and things down the track.
Yeah, that's it. So really, it's just a way to get some money in with a couple of simple terms, and they become the norm. So now you can spend up to 10 grand on legal fees for a couple of $1 million in funding. That's pretty quick.
Yeah, nice. Advantage for the people that are buying in at that, there a lot of the time you're coming in at a discount, right?
Correct. So you make sure that you get that discount, so you can see anywhere from 10 to 25%, with 20% being a norm, so that they do get that discount to reward them for taking on that extra risk in the early stage.
Yeah, completely agree, mate. All good. There are interesting times, obviously, when technology stuff companies are going through those raises. That's a big part of what you do. Outside of that, mate, what are the key things a fractional CFO advises a technology startup or scale up on?
Yeah, so we are really helping out with the financial modeling. So basically taking what the capital they've got and work out how that's going to get spent over the next 3 to 5 years, helping oversee payroll and tax compliance to make sure that the company stays compliant. So they might have a bookkeeper in place, but then it's just making sure that all the compliance stays on top, helping out with any risk reporting, and then also any ESOP structures. So if there's any share option pools, that they've got the right structure in place.
Yeah, nice. Man, Newcastle's a little bit of a smaller market when it comes to startups than obviously Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane. You've worked with CoAssemble locally in Newcastle. They've been growing locally. They're doing quite well in the US, I believe, at the moment. They were structured here for a long time, and I know some of the team's still here, but I think they've grown quite a bit in the US. Mate, outside of that, like, what's the biggest challenge for a Newcastle-based company as opposed to someone in Sydney?
Yeah, I think it's just being able to get a lack of face time with some of the investors that might predominantly live in Sydney and Melbourne. So the more face time that you get with these people, the easier it is to kind of start to build traction for when you want to go out to funding.
Yeah, I think a lot of it does come to that relationship building. Like, I know from a Hunter Angels perspective, there is a desire to invest in Newcastle Hunter-based companies, but those numbers are very different to, you know, a Sydney-based or a Melbourne-based companies as well, just on pure volume as well. There's not that same volume of companies starting and growing locally. So, but from an angel perspective, us and a lot of the members would prefer to invest in a Hunter-based organization because you can build that relationship with them. So I think that does go a long way.
I feel like the early stage investing network it almost penalizes Newcastle in terms of, and so we're not quite seeing the same level of startups that come out of Newcastle compared to the other regions, and it has the flow-on effect of where we don't see as many companies get as big in Newcastle. So we've got Camplify and CoAssemble, which are two big names, but we're just
and I think there is a volume piece there as well. There's a lot of companies that are still doing, you know, reasonably well as well in Newcastle. I think where we've sort of transitioned lately, and the Melt have done a fantastic job of it, is really looking at where the advantages are in the Hunter and in around that manufacturing space as well. And you have a look at, you know, some real successes going on lately with, you know, Allegro and the MGA for two, but these more manufacturing base organizations, like, you have a look at everything they're doing. I think that's where the growth is in the Hunter at the moment, as opposed to pure software, because I don't think Newcastle is ever going to be the software hub of Australia. Definitely not. And we probably can't compete with, you know, the amount of engineers that are in Sydney and definitely the funding that's available in Sydney, but we do have advantages in the Hunter, which you don't have working out of, you know, Sydney or Melbourne. So I think it's been really good to see the growth of that. The Melder, you know, obviously doing quite a bit up in Musselbrook as well. So it's really good to sort of see that growth coming through as well.
Yeah. And the other night I went to the pitch deck night at the Newcastle Uni, yeah, and just seeing some of the companies that are coming out of there. It was just amazing to see so many, like, yeah, non-software companies, but still tackling like really important issues.
Yeah, i2n are doing a fantastic job. That really early stage for Newcastle is really, really early stage entry in. Basics, the information that you need to understand when you're trying to build a startup, trying to get it from ground zero to that next level, and then, you know, the traction up from there, I guess, is probably where that gap is for us at the moment.
Yeah.
All good. Matt, obviously, you work from that fractional perspective. I think that, you know, you'd obviously have conversations with multiple companies that are going through those stages. You've only got so many hours a day, weeks in, you know, weeks in the month. What do you look for in a company when you're deciding whether you're going to work with them?
Yeah, I think one of the first things is there, do I gel with the founder? So we need to be able to have a really strong relationship where we can text each other, you know, and have some pretty frank, open, honest chats, but always be healthy. So is there a good fit with the founder? Are they open to collaboration? And that's one of the other things too, is that if the founder is not too keen to collaborate, then there's a chance they're not going to take on anything that might come out of any of the insights and whatnot. And founders that are looking at always building upon themselves from a long-term growth perspective.
Yeah, so you're looking for founders that have a clear vision of where they want to head. Is that, do they need to have a, here's exactly where my end goal is? Or are you all right with, hey, I know what I'm building, I know where the market is, but I'm open to a bit of change?
Yeah, I think the founders that often have the clear vision are the ones that generally succeed.
Yeah.
So they've got an idea of the market that they want to have, they've got the product in their head, and if they've got that openness to be challenged, then as there might be some market signs out that what they're building isn't quite right, then they're eager to kind of pivot that and start to follow.
Cool. Where they think. On that team side, you talk quite a bit about the founder. Mate, as you're working with companies that have just raised some money, are there some key hires that you tend to see time and time again with companies that grow successfully?
Yeah, so it all depends on the stage of the fundraising. So if it's early stage and they're building out product, just make sure they're going to put on enough engineers to actually get all the features built. At some point, there'll be a finance or ops hire that will come in, and they basically can build out all of the systems in place. Yeah. If it's a Series A round and the investment is marked for go-to-market, then somebody who can really own that go-to-market, such as sales, as a sales leader or even a marketing leader.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think, you know, chief revenue officers or CCO, chief commercial officer, CMO, like those are the roles where I see, especially at the moment where there is a prioritization of actually bringing dollars in the door. I think there's a lot more focus right now on actually converting some of that, where in the past, I think it really was engineering heavy and I was building product first, whereas now, because of that fundraising skewing towards some form of traction and your profitability, you see those revenue related roles being highly prioritized.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's just more an emphasis now on how can we do more with less.
Yeah.
And so that just gets translates down in terms of fundraising rounds, in terms of like, all right, well, if this is what we've got, then who can do more?
Yeah, nice, man. Mate, on an individual, you just mentioned more with less. You obviously work with multiple companies. There'll be multiple priorities rolling through that. Like, how do you manage a day or how do you manage a week? So if somebody's considering a fractional role, working with multiple companies, whether it be as a consultant or a fractional CTO, CFO, mate, how do you manage your day? How do you manage your weeks?
Huge calendar fan. So I just make sure that I've always got all of my tasks like pre-booked out for the day. I coordinate those with school pickups. Yeah.
Mate, how do you, because I think this is the changing nature, and I think COVID had a massive effect on this. Everyone went from working in the office full-time to working fully remote full-time, and then some form of hybrid seems to be the normal at the moment. But what it has opened up is the opportunity for people to prioritize family. Being there for drop-offs and pickups seems to be more normal than it used to be as well. Mate, how have you seen that change in that space?
I must admit, I was one of those people that didn't know remote work existed before COVID. And so, I was working at Quiller at the time, and then we went remote as all of the world. And that was when I moved out of Sydney into Newcastle. And then it really just unlocked a level of life where you could basically work around the commitments. And so, some of the commitments that I just make sure happen every day, the school pickups.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, I think the quality of life part is significantly different once you can add that sort of thing and prioritize that.
Yeah, I found the changes have been really good for kind of factoring in work into our lives. So my wife, she works at the John Hunter Hospital. So basically, I do the pickups, and then I'll be able to work in a schedule that fits me. So it might be that I'm working at night time, but for me, it outweighs the bad.
Yeah, working 9 to 5 or at best in Sydney or something like that. I think a lot of people based in Newcastle, not having to do that long commute every day, or even if you're working locally, not having to commute long things every day, being able to sort of work in life and work in more of a balance, and something's, you know, more maintainable on a longer term.
Yeah, I get to do things like do reading groups at my daughter's school, which is just so much more fun than an hour commute one way in Sydney.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned the calendar. Is there any other tools that you use from a software perspective to help manage your day, or help you from a productivity perspective?
Yeah, I'm a super big Notion user. Yeah. So basically, live my life in Notion, personal, work, different clients, everything lives in Notion.
I think I definitely still have Notion. But it feels like I probably haven't got the value out of it some other people. From what I understand, you're either all in or you don't get that same level of value out of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nice. Mate, from a learning perspective, is there any books or a podcast or anything that you found super beneficial that you'd highly recommend to other people?
The one book I would recommend for any founder, whether technical or not, is the book called Venture Deals. It's almost like the Bible of fundraising. And so if you're even thinking about going through the process, or if you're going through it, then have a read of that, because you're going to learn something which might save you a lot of money in nice, a bad mate. Deal.
Oh, good, mate. I think obviously you bring a lot of wealth of experience and expertise when it comes to, especially in and around that fundraising, early stage ESOP, that type of thing from a startup perspective. If somebody's locally based in Newcastle, they're considering, or they've got a startup, they're considering growth, how would people get in touch with you?
Yeah, they can find me on LinkedIn or on my website, which is quickratio.io. Yeah.
Mate, appreciate it. Thank you for your time today.
No worries. Thanks for having me. Cheers.